On this week's 51%, we hear a story about the intersection of a tragedy and, separately, the COVID-19 pandemic through the story of one woman. When there were instructions to stay home and social distance, she got it.
I've done this. I get this. You know, I feel way ahead probably than other people because I had this tragedy last year in such a personal nature, and now we're experiencing it in a global and community-wide way.
I'm Allison Dunn, and this is 51%.
So I feel like we either bend like a twig or we stand really stiff and we break in these times. And we have that choice, hopefully.
Well, you sure as hell didn't break last year.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Like another type of person maybe would have broken under, you know, the intense, I don't know, shock and change of having your husband commit suicide and having to tell your children. And, you know, at first, of course, it feels like you're going to, but then you have a choice point, I think, or I felt like I had a choice point to bend with that and ask internally, okay, what is this asking me for? You know, and of course, when you have kids, you're a mom, you have so much inspiration to like get it together, not in a superficial way, but like I have to find the teaching in this in order to transmit it to my children.
You said there was a point where you might have gone one way and then you chose to go another way, or was it that conscious?
I don't think it was that conscious. Certainly the first week, the first day, the first hours, all you're doing is surviving it. You know, you're just putting one foot in front of another. And, you know, maybe about a month in, I would say, there starts to be a space maybe to reflect. Or to start to go, you know, why is this happening? But not in a, like, I need an answer way, more in, I don't know, I'm just a person that needs to search for meaning in order to move forward. And so I think it was more like, how can I bring meaning to this, or how can I find meaning in this? And that's the bending moment. I just fully believe and feel and have lived my life like there's nothing that's all bad and nothing that's all good. Everything is everything. And for me, everything has a deeper meaning, and that's what I had to find in my husband's death, really. And I'm still finding, probably. So, you know, it felt like the initiation into a journey, a personal journey for me and my kids. And I think that journey is still happening.
At what point in the journey? It's been a year and a few months.
Yeah.
In terms of kind of the architecture of a journey, where you're starting off and then you go through the kind of darkest, deepest part of the innermost cave of the moment that you're overcoming. In that innermost cave place, when was that happening?
The worst, darkest part is the police and fire chief and a friend came to tell me that afternoon that he had shot himself. And then I had to tell my kids, you know, and like that was like trial by fire. And I think that was definitely the darkest moment, and and yet was an initiation, because I feel like bringing it to the pandemic, and basically after you have to tell your kids when they come home from school, you know, that your husband had depression, their father had depression, and Sean himself, nothing else looks that hard, you know. So that was definitely the darkest part. And then just that first month or two where I was just in it with my children, just supporting, feeling, holding witness to their feeling. The image I used was like of being shot out of a cannon. You know, I just felt like in that one instance, when that one moment when he made that decision, everything for all three of us just completely changed, and there was nothing to hold on to. And just month after month, that surrender, I do not know anything. I think that was also compounded because the day after my husband died, his brother invited us to move to Vermont to live, be close to family. And so I was also in shock that that was happening and letting go into that possibility, which, as you know, I ultimately have decided to move all the way across country. So in the middle of a pandemic. I mean, I'd already made the decision, and I actually even bought a house right before all this closed down. You know, so there's been those kinds of like blessings and support from the universe where I felt like my path, my journey with my kids was being supported by what was happening around me. But just, you know, to go back to last year and the journey, I felt like it was so much about just surrendering to the unknown and resting in the unknown. And that I realized how much of the time we put our ideas of what we want, of what we're going to do, of what should be done on top of simply the present moment. And I feel like my experiences last year were just about how to be in the present moment and respond to what was arising, rather than having some kind of preconceptual, logical, mental idea about what should be happening. And I just really followed that through everything, including, you know, my kids were each becoming bar and bat mitzvah last year on top of everything else, and just completely following in the moment the realization that, like, no, the plan for that needed to completely change, and I needed to respond to them and their needs. I needed to respond to myself and my own needs. And so, you know, like 90% of the people got disinvited, and we just did a small ceremony with family that became a really deep initiation ritual, because my kids were allowed to have their feelings in a way they wouldn't have in a larger crowd. And I think that was just representative of the whole year, of the whole journey, really, of learning to respond rather than have some idea. And so when COVID hit, it was the same thing. I was like, I've done this. I get this. You know, I feel way ahead probably than other people, because I had this tragedy last year in such a personal nature, and now we're experiencing it in a global and community-wide way. But I've just stayed with that same type of thing, like what is the meaning that I can derive from this on a community-wide level or a global, what is this bringing us? What is this bringing us? And staying in the present moment and not having some preconceived idea about what should or shouldn't be happening. That there's an energy in the world that is dynamic, that is action, take control and getting overly fixated on the thoughts that we need to plan and think and have goals and the shoulds and the what ifs, yang way of being, that's the culture that we've lived in, and that we don't honor so much the yin side of things, which is being and receiving and being in the moment and seeing what's here in the moment. We're out of balance in that way. And that, for me, that's part of the meaning of this, that we've been asked to do what? Stay home. Not take all this action. And that's really pointing out how much we've been indoctrinated to think the only way to happiness or success is this more masculine, active way. And that's really not serving the earth. We want to mine the earth for gems, so we mine the earth for gems. We need wood for houses, so we take this action. These are all ideas we have. Is that really, if we're responding to the earth, you know, and responding to the global warming crisis, would we honestly still be doing that? For me, the opportunity in this pandemic is to realize maybe we need to be responding rather than thinking about dynamic of action and being. And I know for me, being home like this has really taught me how healing it is just to sit and be with my kids, not trying to talk or teach or do, or sitting outside and just watching the green of the spring bursting forth from the trees. You know, we've overcomplicated things, and I feel like the pandemic is really bringing some different ideas and different possibilities that I really hope all of us in our own way are learning from, because obviously our world does need a different kind of balance right now.
To the person who's completely dismantled, disoriented, broken, what do you say to them?
I mean, one, I just, you know, feel so much compassion for that person, because I mean, it sounds strange, but I do feel blessed in that I have gone through hard things. And so, you know, maybe they're more beginning the journey of hard things, and really reaching out for support is so, so important. If you're struggling, having somebody who can just listen and be with your struggle in a compassionate and open-hearted way, it can be super healing. So whether that's a friend or a spiritual teacher or a therapist, or, you know, I think each person's going to have to kind of look within themselves.
That idea of going inside of ourselves, that the expert or the person out there or anything external, we can get inspiration from that, and the answer is deep within us.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree to that. And there's so many ways to kind of try and access that. But you're right. You know, I might find meaning in this. I will find meaning in this in a different way than you might find meaning in this. And you'll use different words. And I think that quest of what is this bringing me? And the question, if this is here to teach me something, what is it here to teach me?
Staying fascinated, staying curious, and staying kind to ourselves while we feel the full range of whatever comes.
Yeah, and I think also to really put the ingredient of not knowing in there, I really, really invite people to do that. Because when you allow yourself to not know what this is bringing you, not know what this is trying to teach you, you allow your brain and your soul to open up to new information. If you think you already know what it's trying to teach you, then you're not delving into the depths of yourself where you have deep wisdom to wonder, to just wonder. I wonder what this has to teach me personally. I wonder what this has to teach me as a member of the human race. And then to just let that float around in your brain, you know, go for a walk, make your bread, you know, whatever it is you're doing, and just see what arises that's bigger than just from your little mind that already knows. I think that is really, I would say, you know, the key ingredient in the recipe of using yourself as a source of deep wisdom for yourself in this time.
Izzy and I went to the memorial and to the funeral, and I'll never forget just the two points of take me back to standing up on the bima, and what you said was the most moving, unforgettable moment. Your strength, your focus, and your simplicity. Do you remember what you said?
I mean, I don't remember exactly, but I do remember the moment and the moments before, absolutely. You know, of course, I'll never forget that. I just felt stripped to the bone, and I was, you know, it wasn't really conscious, but I was just like, I don't have anything in me to be false anymore. And honestly, that was one of the blessings of it. And so that day at the, you know, funeral memorial service, what was most true for me was this shock at how full the room was in counterpoint to how bad my husband was feeling about himself in his depression, and how, you know, he felt unloved and bad at his work, and all these things that I knew, of course, were not true. But here was a room stuffed to the gills full of people who obviously cared about him, and that juxtaposition to his mental illness state that caused him to take that action. And so I was just full of that, and I was like, I can't honestly let this pass by without really taking it in. And I don't know if that's like, it's like he couldn't take it in, so I was going to. And so when I stood up there, I said something about, like, I just need to take in that all of you are here.
You put your hand on your heart. I am here to take in what Glenn could not.
Shakespearean. Yes. Yeah, I mean, it was an incredible moment for me, especially as an introvert, because there was a lot of people there, and I was like, I don't care. And I still have that. It's indelibly imprinted in my mind. Oh my God. None of us know how much we're loved. None of us. And let's not wait. Let's not wait for somebody else to stand up at our funeral and look out there for us. You know, look out and, like, really take it in, receive that.
And then the moment at the funeral, you were a lioness. The way that you were holding your kids, it was like a lightning rod. And I just wonder if you can, like, speak to how you held strength in such a shattering moment.
I mean, honestly, I don't know. I mean, it's not a part of me I'm super conscious of. Maybe it's just biological. You know, that was my first thought and only thought for probably 6 months in a way. I will get my kids through this. We will come out stronger. I just... you know, I can feel that part of me. There just was no other option. I don't know if other people would have a choice, or it seems like most mothers would just do the same thing. And but yeah, I did feel like a lioness, like I will in any way possible do anything to get them through this. And you know, honestly, probably part of that was fueled by the piece of me that was so angry. There's lots of pieces, obviously, where when somebody commits suicide, you have all the different feelings. But that part that was angry, like, I can't believe you did this to them, and I will not let it break them.
With COVID happening and the move and all this transition and so much, how do you feel Glenn's death has, and just the whole process of metabolizing that, how has that prepared you and your kids to meet this time?
After you have to tell your kids that your husband has committed suicide, you know, nothing is hard, honestly. But I think it is true. The rest of the world had the tragedy start this year, and we had a like pre-class in it last year. So we got our degree last year in tragedy. And this year we're, yeah, okay, we can do this. we've taken this class. So I think in that way, it's been more about having compassion for other people. And we've been touched very personally. I mean, we've had my kids' great aunt and great uncle living in New York, and they both passed away a week apart from each other. You know, we had online funerals and online Shiva, and that, of course, brings up, you know, the death of their dad. And, you know, we had to navigate that. But I do think one thing, good thing about living through tragedy is that you develop the skills, and the heart is a muscle and needs exercise. And unfortunately, challenging things are the exercise that it needs to build stronger. And so I think we built strong hearts last year. And so this year we're like, we got this. We got this. Maybe we're baking a few too many cookies, but we got it. You know, and hopefully being there for other people who are struggling more with it than who didn't get that class last year. And of course, I'm glad they didn't.
Emerging from tragedy, emerging from the deepest, innermost cave, what does it take to emerge?
I mean, I think for me in my journey, what I feel like is I'm still in that surrendered place, that the emerging happens when the universe wants it to happen. I'm just along for the ride. I don't think I've emerged yet. I think because we're still in the process, obviously, of this pandemic. And then on a personal level, you know, I'm still on my journey moving to Vermont. And I guess in my mind, I've thought once we get to our new house and new school, that maybe that's an emerging moment, but ultimately paying attention to it and understanding that I don't control that. That's not something I can plan. Just like we can't plan, things are starting to open up, but what will this summer be like? Will we close down again? We don't know. What is stressful is when we start to think in the future, or we start to get attached to when we want that emergence to happen, or think we want it to happen. And that the more important thing is, again, to just stay in the moment and respond to what is now, you know, whether that's hard or good or a mix of both, you know, kind of like a mother would respond to a baby crying or a baby cooing. We need to be responding to our own lives and to our own selves and to our families and our friends in that kind of caring way, I think. And the emergence, I think, will take us by surprise. You know, one day we'll be like, oh, you know, here I am standing on the other side. Or that's how I imagine it for myself, at least. And hopefully, you know, at that point, some celebration or gratitude or, but who knows? But I think it's really about being willing to just witness it and trust the timing of it and not think that you have to control it at all. Honestly.
Sort of a relief in a way.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, I think, developing trust in the unknown and being in the present moment. I feel really calm in this. You know, have I cried? Absolutely. Have I been upset? Absolutely. But overall, I don't feel stressed. And I think that's it, to learn trust and to learn surrender to just what's happening now. That is, there is a lot of relief and calm in that.
Ari Golden is an artist and producer. You can find out more about her work at arigolden.com. That's ARIGOLDEN.com. And you can follow her on Instagram at Ari Golden. That's our show for this week. Thanks to Tina Rennick for production assistance. Our executive producer is Dr. Alan Shartok. Our theme music is Glow in the Dark by Kevin Bartlett. This show is a national production of Northeast Public Radio. If you'd like to hear this show again, sign up for our podcast or visit the 51% archives on our website at wamc.org. This week's show is number 1613.